Welcome. I'm Brother Eric John Phillips, podcast for 24/7 World Radio on this July the 13th, 2025. The topic of this message today is Islam is the sword of the church controlled by the Jesuit order. Sunni Islam is the sword of the church controlled by the Jesuit order. This is important because the Jesuits have for some time sought to use Muslims to bring them out of the Middle East into historic white Protestant nations, to kill them, to kill white people, to rape their women, our women, to bastardize our race, to create crime everywhere, to ultimately justify then a new right political movement run by the Jesuits that will then round them up and take them to concentration camps. Because the Jesuits, after they use their killers, are going to destroy them with another faction that the Jesuits will raise up to do that. Remember, this is war. The Jesuit order is the greatest military operation in world history. There's none greater than this order, the Society of Jesus. And so we Bible-believing men of God, work to perceive their workings as we know their history, as we know their principles, and ultimately their end game of destroying historic white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Western civilization, the heart of which now is the United States of America. Now, the scriptural basis for this broadcast is Ephesians 5:11, that we are to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, or bring them to light. So it's my purpose here today to bring to light the unfruitful works of darkness of the papacy in attempting to use Islam to destroy white Anglo-Saxon Protestant peoples. And so I'm focusing today on this topic because a dear brother, Brother Mark, sent me a YouTube video produced by the Seventh-day Adventists concerning the Vatican controlling Islam. And it's very good. It's an excellent video. And it's on YouTube. The title of the video is "They're Working Together. The Pope Created Islam, and There's Proof. A Catholicism-Islam Connection." The Adventists put this together, and Seventh-day Adventists put this together. But nonetheless, it's a very good video and very accurate, so I recommend that you watch this. And Alberto Vivero, many years ago, as a Jesuit priest who was saved by the grace of God and came out, and one of the cartoon style of writing. There are six of them that Chick Publications put out. And one of them is called The Prophet. And it's Alberto Rivera's telling you that the papacy has created Islam. And he gets into present-day history of the workings of the papacy, or the Jesuit papacy, with Islam. So I want to give a few examples of that to you, to show you that the papacy, run by the Jesuits, since no later than 1814, when they're brought back to power by Pope Pius VII, after he's released or captured or freed by King George III, when the Pope was captive to Napoleon for 5 years, shows you that the Jesuits were running Great Britain in 1914 to King George III, that they controlled the British Empire no later than, I say, from 1760 onward to today. So the Jesuits were restored by Pope Pius VII in 1814, brought back into the papacy after their 41-year suppression and extinction by the Pope. And they begin to continue to take over everything. And so the Jesuits in control of Great Britain will take over Arabia. The first white man of note to go to Mecca in 1853 was Sir Francis Richard Burton. He was a knight of the British Empire, probably another papal knight of Malta, one of the foremost authorities on the Arab world, and spoke fluent Arabic, along with some other, 28 different languages. He is the author of Arabian Nights, among other works. He's a brilliant, brilliant man, brilliant servant of the devil. But I maintain this is the man that the Jesuits used through their control of the British Empire to begin to get absolute control over Arabia, which would later be called Saudi Arabia, after the Saud dynasty of Arabia. So, this is important because the Saudi Arabia, founded in 1932 with King Ibn Saud, backed by Winston Churchill, another tool of the Jesuit order and high-level Freemason, and that Ibn Saud would be put as the king of the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, so that the Jesuits could begin to build their second Sunni caliphate after the first one had been destroyed in World War I and formally ended in 1924. So from 1924 to 1932, we have 8 years. And the Jesuits are building their Saudi Arabian kingdom in control of King Ibn Saud, who was a personal friend of Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill. All of them Freemasons, for that matter. So in building Saudi Arabia in anticipation of the establishment of the second Sunni caliphate after the destruction of the Ottoman Empire that had been around for some 700 years, the Sunni Islamic Ottoman Empire, the Jesuits will also begin to build their revived Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem. Because we're going back to the Dark Ages. The Dark Ages had the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem. The Dark Ages had the Sunni Ottoman Empire. So in going back to the Dark Ages, the Jesuits are modeling this design by building their various new nations after the fall of the Ottoman Empire. Their key quest here, because the Jesuits were founded first to take Jerusalem from the Muslims, and second then to destroy the Reformation and to restore the world to the Pope's Dark Ages. And you can find that in Wiley's great work, The History of Protestantism, Volume 2, in some 15 pages or so on the Jesuit order. So as we continue to expose Satan's works of darkness, the Jesuits then will begin to use Islam as their sword. And most people will see or believe that Islam is an enemy of the papacy, when in fact, at the top, through its various Masonic secret societies, the leaders of Islam and the leaders of the West, the British Empire, America, Germany, are all high-level Freemasons or Knights of Malta working together as the Templars and the Assassins, as the Roman Catholic Templars and the Shia Assassins work together during the Dark Ages, during the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem. Even so, the high leaders of the papacy worked together with the high leaders of Islam. And the high leaders of Islam are ruled by the Jesuit order, the most powerful secret society in the world, the greatest military company in the world. And hence, the Jesuits then will use Islam as their sword to destroy targeted populations. And I will give you several examples of this. As an aside, Jesuit Benjamin Chavez talked about the merging of Islam with Romanism. So the Jesuits are backing Islam. Now, if you think the Jesuits intend to give Europe to Islam, you're mistaken. Europe will never be driven into Mohammedism. The white Europeans are to be driven into a new right in Europe, according to Martin Lee in his work, The Beast Reawakens. That's what's coming for Europe. But for this to happen, all the historic white Protestant and also white Catholic nations have to merge and to be driven together, having a common enemy that would be the Islamic invaders that the governments of these nations in Europe deliberately brought there under the control of the Jesuits to drive the white people into this new right, this new quasi-fascism, whatever you want to call it. And so that's the real purpose of Islam. And when Islam has served that purpose in Europe, all those Muslims will be rounded up and sent to camps and exterminated. Europe is not going Islam. King Charles may be openly talking about becoming a Muslim, but this is all a design to drive the white people of Europe to desperation into the arms of a coming European dictator, staunchly in the hands of the papacy, of some Jesuit-ruled pope. Now, I said I would give you some... Oh, one more thing. The Jesuit pope, Francis I, he invited Islamic prayers in the Vatican gardens. What's that about? Well, that's to further invite these Muslims into Europe for their targeted murder, rounding up and execution. It's the exact same tactic of inviting all these alien Roman Catholic Hispanic invaders into North America, into the U.S., to drive the white people of the U.S. into desperation. That will then round up, what will result in their roundups of these alien Roman Catholic Hispanic invaders. They're going. They're the low populations of Central and South American countries. They're going to be annihilated here. But to set up that machine of annihilation, which is a new right, it's necessary to bring them here and to incite them to criminal activity. It's criminal activity for them to even be here illegally. They're all criminals. They're all in violation of the law. Nobody comes in my house without my invitation. You come into my house with my invitation, I'll shoot you. So it should be with these invaders. You come up here illegally, I just ought to start picking them off. One by one, you kill 300 or 400 of them, they're not going to come up here anymore. You don't have to put a wall up. You don't have to put concertina wire up. Just have a couple of army brigades on the border there, and anybody that comes across, you shoot them. That's how you handle illegal invasion. It's not immigration, it's invasion. Then it would end. But you see, the military government in Washington, run by the Pope, wants this. It's brought in 20, 30, how many, maybe 40 million of these aliens in here so that they can justify the imposition of their new right and their martial law. So all these Hispanic invaders are suckers. They've been used for the purposes of the papacy. So, I want to give you some examples of how Islam has been used by the papacy to kill targeted populations. One of the first targeted populations that comes to mind is, well, when Islam was in its infancy, in the 700s thereabouts, it killed Jewish communities in Arabia, and it killed Bible-believing, New Testament believers in Christ. I hate to call them Christians. New Testament believers in Christ that were not Roman Catholics or not Catholics, not backed by the papacy at the time. And so they used Islam to destroy biblical, Bible-based, first century type Christianity and the Jews, the racial Hebrew Jewish Israelites. These are the two primary targets, non-Roman Catholic Christians and Jews for Islam. So that's what they pulled off in the first, couple hundred years of Islam, until finally when Islam, that had been backed by the papacy in its jihads, when it took Jerusalem in about, 750 thereabouts, when they took Jerusalem, I'll find it. Yes, when the Muslims took Jerusalem in 638, and I believe it was Omar who took it. Then he's going to build the Mosque of Omar. They're going to keep it. They're going to keep Jerusalem, and they're going to keep it until 1099, when the Knights take Jerusalem from the Muslims, and the Knights will hold it in their kingdom of Jerusalem until 1291, until the Muslims drive out the Knights, and they kill all the Roman Catholics. Okay, for the most part. And it's this time that, around 750 thereabouts, that when the Muslims do not give Jerusalem to the Pope, this starts the Crusades. And so the Crusades will rage, and there were 9 of them, and I believe we are in the 12th Crusade right now, led by the Jesuits in control of the Pope's military government of the United States of America. So Islam was not under control of the papacy for some, 700, 800 years, until, I believe, when the Jesuits took the British Empire in 1760, that the British Empire then began to take Arabia through certain of its agents like Sir Francis Richard Burton and others, to the end that Arabia would be in the hands of the Jesuits in control of the British. Now, there were certain events that led up to this, and I'll give you a few of them. One of the first events was the Sunni Muslim Turkish Caliphate Ottoman Empire's mass murder of the Armenian Eastern Orthodox Christian people in 1915 and thereabouts for a couple of years, during World War I. During World War I, the Jesuits would use the Muslims of their Sunni caliphate to kill approximately at least 1.5 million Armenian Christians. It's called the Armenian Massacre, carried out by the Turks. And it's a horrible story. We need to know about it. There is a statue in the city of Detroit in remembrance of the Armenian Massacre, where it states that 1.5 million Armenians were murdered, and it's probably more than that. It's utter savagery. And of course, the Turks then would take the beautiful Armenian women and put them in their harems and take turns raping them. That's the good Turkish Muslim way. Don't talk to me about a high moral fiber of the Turks. And so, which is a warning, by the way, that when the Turks get here, when there's a Muslim invasion arriving here, that's what they're going to do to these American white women. But we have history on our side to prove the point. The question is, will it be heeded? Going on. So this is known as the Armenian Massacre. To this day, the Turks deny it. They deny it. What a disgrace. And the greater disgrace is that this military government in Washington has built the military of Turkey since after World War II, when Turkey was brought into the NATO. NATO justified the building of the military of Turkey so that it could ultimately one day be used in conjunction with Russia in our coming Sino-Soviet Muslim invasion, because this military government of Washington has built the militaries of communist red Russia, communist red China, the Muslim nations, Turkey. These nations that will invade us, coming for our destruction, have been armed and given our high technology to kill us with it. Okay? This government in Washington, District of Catholics, District of Coloreds, District of Communists, hates us white Anglo-Saxon Protestant and Baptist peoples, and they are hell-bent on our destruction, as they have been since FDR imposed that military government on March 9th, 1933. So that's the first major massacre of the Muslims of the 20th century. Remember, part of the Jesuit design of the 20th century is to destroy the Ottoman Empire. You cannot have a nation of Israel with an Ottoman Empire in place. You cannot have a revived nation of Israel pursuant to Ezekiel 38:8 if you have an Ottoman Empire in place. It's not going to happen. The Turks would never allow a nation of Israel to be birthed within the Ottoman Empire. Never. So it had to be destroyed. And so the Jesuits used the British Army to destroy it during World War I and afterwards. And meanwhile, the Jesuits will have a wonderful sacrifice of about 100,000 beautiful white Protestant Englishmen at Gallipoli. We'll deliberately lose that battle. That's another disgrace that the Jesuits put on the British people during the reign of King George V, that night of Malta and traitor to the British people. So we go on, and in 1917, during World War I, the Jesuits use King George V, running the British Empire, and I believe it's Mehmet I, Mehmet II, who's the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire. The Sultan is Mehmed V, M-E-H-M-E-D, Mehmed V. He is the Sultan from 1909 to 1918, and during his reign, in 1917, this Masonic Sultan contributes to the loss of Jerusalem, the Ottoman Empire losing it in 1917, when the British fly over Jerusalem and they drop leaflets. And those leaflets warn the Muslims, you better leave Jerusalem, among other things. And so on orders from the Turkish officers received from the Sultan, they order the evacuation of Jerusalem. There was no battle there in 1917. And this enabled the British officer, General Allenby, who was another brother Freemason, to dismount his horse and enter Jerusalem through the Jaffa Gate. And he said, I will not enter Jerusalem as a conqueror. I'll enter it as a pilgrim. King George V and Mehmet V worked together to evacuate the Muslim army from Jerusalem so the British could take it. And now is the beginning, really, of the revived Latin kingdom of Jerusalem, of which the Muslim Sunni leaders participated in. They wanted a new nation of Israel that would start out with a mere taking of Jerusalem. But they backed it, because the Masons of Islam and the Masons of the West of Britain worked together under orders of high Jesuits telling them what to do. Because the Jesuits want a third Hebrew temple, just as their precursors, the Knights Templars. And so it was necessary to break up the Ottoman Empire, to have Jerusalem evacuated, in order for ultimately the third temple, for ultimately Israel to be established in 1948, and a third temple to be built. Now the next thing is, we have to have the beginning of the Saudi Arabian Empire, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Because out of the Ottoman Empire, the Jesuits are going to create the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the nation of Israel. They will divide up the Ottoman Empire into Iraq and Lebanon and Jordan. And so, to do this, they had to create the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and they did this in 1932 with Ibn Saud. Who backed him? Freemason Winston Churchill and Benito Mussolini, too. Mussolini and Churchill backed Ibn Saud to make him king. So he's made king in 1932. The Jesuits also desired purpose to make Saudi Arabia rich. Oh, and by the way, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the king has cordoned off the Mount Allahs in Arabia. That's the mount where the Lord descended when he gave the law to Israel. And it's been discovered, and a tremendous video has been made on it called In Search for the Real Mount Sinai by a Christian gentleman and his Jewish friend. And they show you where this mount has been fenced off, and if anybody goes in there, they'll be killed. That's what the wonderful, virtuous Islamic religion has done, to keep that mount secret so that no one can see that it's been scorched black at the top because of the fire that the Lord descended in when he went to speak with Moses. That's all cordoned off, man. Good old virtuous Islam suppressing the truth of the Bible as pursuant to its orders from the Roman papacy run by the Black Pope, overseen by the devil. Now, in 1933, something most significant will happen. The largest commercial agreement in the history of the world will be executed between Standard Oil of California and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I mentioned this in my book, Vatican Assassins, as I read the book, The Kingdom, Arabia and the House of Saud by Robert Lacey. And he shows us in his book that on 29th of May, 1933, it's called the Oil Concession, Abdullah Suleiman and Lloyd Hamilton of Standard Oil of California signed this the greatest commercial agreement in history. It's called the Oil Concession. Standard Oil of California was one of the seven sisters of the Rockefeller dynasty. Remember John D. Rockefeller and his career, written in 1913 or so, shows you that Rockefeller was the one. You have Rockefeller and the seven sisters. All those oil companies are run by the Jesuits. In the Standard Oil Trust that Rockefeller wrote, and John D. Rockefeller, his career, he modeled the Standard Oil Trust after the Jesuit order, he being the Jesuit general. The author of the book even says it. I've mentioned it before. The Jesuits ran Standard Oil. They ran Standard Oil of California. And so the Jesuits, through their knights, entered into the largest oil concession in world history to make Arabia, Saudi Arabia, a monopoly in oil production. This would then justify the Jesuits running America through their Rockefeller entities and other papal servants in the Council on Foreign Relations to shut down our oil production. That's why oil production was shut down. Where do you think all that oil went out of the Alaskan pipeline? It didn't come here. They sent it to Japan. American suckers once again being robbed, raped, and pillaged by the Jesuits running their emergency war powers military government for the building of a huge Sunni Islamic kingdom that is super rich. I've seen the pictures of the king and his gold troves. Gold everywhere, all these gold bars. You know why he has that gold? Because of American technology getting that oil out of the ground for them. So that they can amass a huge wealth there in the rebuilding of the reenactment or the restoration of the Saudi, of the Sunni caliphate. It's going to be the second Sunni caliphate. They have gold. They're going to back the dinar with their gold. The money of the second Sunni caliphate is going to be the dinar. The Qatar is loaded with gold. Kuwait is loaded with gold. Saudi Arabia is loaded with gold. UAE loaded with gold. I mean, gold and oil, gold and oil. They're getting gold all for the oil that they're selling, and they have an oil monopoly to the detriment of the Americans. Why do you think you pay $3.50 a gallon or more than that? Because of the monopoly, the oil monopoly on gas and oil, so that they can jack up the price and we have to pay it rather than pay 50 cents a gallon or a dollar a gallon if we bring out all of our oil out of America. Remember, America has at least 500 years of oil in its present consumption and 1,500 years of coal in its present consumption. And yet we're all broke. Every American I know is broke. We're living from week to week, man. We got to be rich because we've enriched the world, especially the Muslim world, so they can come over here and kill us. That's what the papacy does. It finances the enemies of a people that they wish to destroy, that people. And so they've done it to us. So, yeah, this huge oil concession of 1933. And who runs it? Knights of Malta. A man by the name of John McCone would later be the head of Standard Oil of California. And in 1963, John McCone would be the head of the CIA and a Knight of Malta. And John McCone would facilitate the CIA assassination of John F. Kennedy. Okay? Along with other various and sundry knights. This very Standard Oil of California gave all the technology to get oil out of the ground to these Muslim Arab peoples, making them rich and wealthy, and ultimately an enemy of America, and ultimately a friend of Israel controlled by the Pope, because now, as you know, Saudi intelligence is working with Mossad. And the successful attack into Iran by Trump and the bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities, remember Iran is Shia, it would be impossible without Mossad, CIA, and Saudi intelligence all working together. They work together. And the leaders of Iran work together, too, which I will prove to you in a minute. So, we're going to go back a little bit with the fall of the Ottoman Empire, and the British take Jerusalem, and they take that general vicinity. They have a Jew that's going to be the head, the commissioner of Palestine. His name is Herbert Samuel, another Jewish Freemason. And he will appoint Haj Amin al-Husseini as the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, to the utter shock of the Muslims living in Jerusalem. They considered Husseini a thug, a punk. Why would the British appoint such a man as the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem? Because he's going to be an agitator, and he's going to be the forerunner of Yasser Arafat, who would be controlled by the papacy. He would have a Roman Catholic wife. He would die with over $1 billion. Arafat kept the agitation going in Jerusalem, in Israel. The whole Oslo Accords brings Yasser Arafat back to power. While at the same time, the leaders of Israel are going to give the Temple Mount to the Muslims, or give the Temple Mount will be given to the papacy. The leaders of Israel give it to the Vatican. September of 1993, Yossi Belin does it. While they bring back Yasser Arafat as a threat to the nation of Israel with the Oslo Accords. See how they keep the agitation going? See how they run Islam? Going on. That's Herbert Samuel. Don't ever forget his name. Great traitor to the Jewish people. So we go on and we go to 1930s. Let's go to the 1930s. In the 1930s, about 1933, Spain goes through a revolution. And one of the things the Spanish revolutionists do, the Republicans do, is they kick out the Jesuits out of Spain. And they open the convents. And the places where these poor little nuns have been the victims of rape by these savage Roman Catholic priests. And the babies that they bore were killed. And they lined, and they found all these baby skeletons and skulls. And so the Spanish Republicans pulled out all those little skeletons and they lined the walls with these skulls of these aborted babies, of these murdered babies. The Jesuits absolutely hated the Republicans. And so they brought a man to power by the name of Generalissimo Franco. And Franco said, I am... determined, if I have to, I'll kill every Spaniard in Spain to bring us back to the Pope. Franco was a thug. I was stationed in Germany at the time. He was still in ruling Spain in 1974 or thereabouts. And the U.S. government, the military government, was backing Franco, showing that the Jesuits ran the government again here in D.C., backing one of their chief tyrants during the World War II with Hitler and Mussolini. It was Franco, Hitler, and Mussolini, that ungodly Roman Catholic triumvirate. Backed by District of Columbia, overseen by Jesuits of Georgetown. So, it's called the Spanish Civil War. It lasts for 3 years, from 1936 to 1939. Says killed 600,000 Spaniards. Well, there's a Spanish expatriate lives in South America. He said, oh no, it was no 600,000. It was more like 2 million. Franco killed 2 million Spaniards during that three-year Spanish Civil War. And you know what he did? He brought in several tens of thousands of Muslim troopers. I think it was in the area of 40,000. And you know what he did? He used those Muslim troopers to gang rape and murder the Spanish Protestants of Spain. They urinated and defecated on the Bible and in their churches. That's what these savage Muslim troopers did to the Bible-believing Spanish Christian people of Spain. Islam is the sword of the Jesuits to kill targeted populations, and especially Orthodox and Protestants. And now we prove it, and that they killed these Protestants. You wanna hear about this? Let me read to you The Days of Our Years by Pierre Van Passen. As we read in Pierre Van Passen's The Days of Our Years, he tells on page 460. Oh, let me see. Well, there was a great evangelization going on in Spain. And many Spanish people were getting saved. They were coming to know the Lord, and this is after the king of Spain had been expelled by the Republicans, that Roman Catholic, I believe it was Alfonso. And with the kicking out of the Jesuits and the kicking out of the king. And there was evangelization going on everywhere. I want to read this to you. I found them under conservative theologians and confirmed fundamentalists. They related to me, and these are the Spanish Christians, they related to me the hopeful beginnings that had been made by the various Protestant missions in Spain since the Republic had been established in 1931 and freedom of worship had been decreed for all faiths. 2 years before Alfonso's, that's the king's, Alfonso's abdication, a humble woman of the people had actually been jailed by the Inquisition. The Inquisition is still in place prior to 1931. The Inquisition, for affirming to some friends gathered around the village pump that our Lord had little brothers and sisters, as the New Testament definitely states. That's exactly right. It's in Matthew 13. And those who wanted to worship outside the official temples had still been doing it in great secrecy and in dread of the Carabineros, the secret police of Spain. All that was changed by the Republic. The Protestant missions had gained 150,000 adherents in Spain in 4 years' time. Those godless workers in the slums of Barcelona, Madrid, and other cities had sent 47,000 of their children, had sent 67,000 of their children to the Protestant day schools. No less than 1 million Bibles had been distributed by the British and Foreign Bible Society, of which 300,000 had been purchased. Yes, the gospel had prospered wonderfully under the Republic. And our brethren of the evangelical branch of the Anglican Church, I was told, had taken a special interest in Spain. And even after the trouble broke out with Franco's revolt, the people had not burned or disturbed a single Protestant chapel. All had remained open and crowded, even on days of bombardment and terror. Okay, well, Rome's going to change that now. So they're going to bring in Franco, that Grand Inquisitor. As to the Protestants, and this is on page 468 of our book, as to the Protestants in territories occupied by the insurgents, there was news only from a few places. Communication between the capital and the cities and provinces in the hands of Franco was not only difficult, it was dangerous to boot. But at least the following incidents were known on the indisputable authority of refugee Protestants from Toledo. Upon the conquest of that city by Franco, the Moors, these are the savage Muslims out of North Africa, the Moors and the soldiers of the Terrico had been let loose in the hospital where a Protestant pastor, Don Jaime Orido, and his wife were confined to bed with illness. They were bayoneted along with the other 250 patients in the institution. It's real Muslim bravery. Don't tell me they're brave. Anybody who bayonets people in a hospital that are helpless are nothing but filthy, stinking cowards. And they are no soldiers and they have no honor. Another pastor in Toledo, Don Miguel Almorain, was arrested in his house and kept a prisoner for a month, then led to the execution field in the company of all the Jews who could be rounded up in the city by the fascists and shot down by a RIF firing squad. At Saragossa, fascist troops pillaged the Protestant chapel, befouling, that means pooping and pissing on the Bible, befouling the Bible and the pulpit with their own order and arrested the pastor, Don Benjamin Harris. He was led out in the square in front of the cathedral after a mass of people had been summoned into the streets to see the show. There the pastor and the local liberals and labor leaders, amongst whom one was deputy to the Cortes, had their hands and feet tied and were left in the middle of the street to face two oncoming 40-ton tanks. And I would like to know what kind of tanks they were. Do you think the U.S. provided those tanks to the Spanish? Filthy fascist Generalissimo Franco boys? So they ran them over with tanks! At Granada, the two Protestant pastors, Don Jose Garcia Fernandez and Don Salvador Ignace, were seized by rebel soldiers and shot. The wife of Dr. Fernandez, rebel soldiers were Franco soldiers, okay? They're fighting against the Republic. They're the rebels. The wife of Dr. Fernandez faced the firing squad with her husband and his colleague after she had been raped by a number of Muslim troopers of a Spahi cavalry regiment. So the dirty, filthy savages, Muslim savages, took their turns in raping, pillaging, and plundering and murder the Spanish Protestant Christians. These people are savages, okay? Their Quran teaches savagery. There's nothing nonviolent about it. It's not a religion of peace, and only a bonesman like George W. Bush would ever tell such a lie in the face of this history that's everywhere. Now, that's in the 1930s. Finally, in 1939, the Republicans are vanquished, and there's a very famous black American gunnery sergeant. He was given posthumously the Medal of Honor years later, but he went over there and he helped the Spanish Republicans. He taught them how to shoot and use machine guns. Carter was his name. A black sergeant, black American sergeant named Carter, he helped the Spanish Republicans. You know what this filthy military government did to him for that? They cut off his pension. I think they kicked him out of the military, something like that. They raked him through the coals. Later, he will be restored, but they will never. And he was a Protestant too, by the way, Mr. Carter. Yeah, helping his Protestant Spanish brethren there fight those Roman Catholic savages of Franco. Yeah, his name was Carter. Look him up. So, this is what the Muslims did in Spain under Franco. They're wonderful killers for the Pope. They have no mercy at all. We won't rape you. We won't kill you and your children. Oh, no, they have no mercy. They're savages. And when we're blamed for the destruction of that Temple Mount Mosque in Jerusalem, maybe even Mecca and Medina, maybe they're going to blow those places too in this coming war and blame Americans for it. They're going to incite the entire billion-man Muslim world to come over here and kill as many of us as possible. That's why we better never give up our guns, ever. Anyone who wants you to give up your guns, dear listener, wants to kill you. Any government that wants gun confiscation wants to kill you. And some of the best material you'll ever get on that, proving this point, is Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. So get their literature. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. All right. So now we have the Muslims killing the Spanish in the 30s. Now here's another one. Mussolini. Jesuit-ruled Mussolini, whose advisor is a sinister-looking Jesuit, secretary of the Society of Jesus named Pietro Tacci Venturi. Chris Pinto has a picture of him in his great work, American Jesuits. I recommend you get that DVD from him. Chris Pinto's Adulum Films, American Jesuits. Therein is a picture of Pietro Tacci Venturi. I couldn't find it, and Chris evidently found it and put it in his recently released DVD. Mussolini will invade Ethiopia in 1937, and there's a famous picture of him sitting on a horse with a sword raised in his right hand, and he's hailed by the Muslims in Ethiopia and Libya as having the sword of Islam, the protector of Islam. So now we have Franco and Mussolini utilizing Islam for the destruction of targeted non-Roman Catholic Christians. And who's Mussolini going to destroy? when Mussolini and his Jesuit Italian army is going to destroy 750,000 Coptic non-Roman Catholic Ethiopian Christians. And Haile Selassie will greatly object to this, and he'll take this to the League of Nations, and the League of Nations are going to say, forget you, boy. So, here's the second example of Muslim Arabs being used by fascists to destroy Protestants and Baptists. First Franco, 1936 to 39, Benito Mussolini, 1937 onward. And you know, that Mussolini, he's so ugly. He's got this iron-looking jaw. And then with that hat that he would wear, that helmet he would wear, they made a picture of that. And all the Ethiopians, when they would walk by this big display of Mussolini, they had to hail, they had to raise their right hand and hail him, rather than spit on that filthy-looking poster. That's what they made those blacks in Ethiopia do. Mm-hmm. Those heretic black Christians, according to the papacy. Condemned heretics. So, our next one is none other than Adolf Hitler. Adolf Schicklgruber, the Austrian, who was made the Führer by the Jesuits in control of Pierre van Pass, he was a Knight of Malta, he was a Vice Chancellor. He is Knight von Papen. And von Papen is the one responsible for bringing Hitler to power, along with Hindenburg, who consents to it. But two of those traitors involved in command of the German army deliberately losing World War I to the French, the English, and the British. French, the British, and the Americans. Remember, it's von Papen and Hindenburg who refuse to evacuate 1 million German troops on the Eastern Front when USSR leaves the war in 1917 with the Brest-Litovsk Agreement. And so those military commanders in charge of the German army could have trained by rail, brought the 1 million troops by rail quickly to the Western Front, and defeated the Americans and the British and the French. But they didn't do it because they're traitors. So, what happens is that Hitler was brought to power by von Papen. And in 1941, Hitler invites none other than the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haji Amin al-Husseini, for 4 years in Berlin to be his guest. I have a picture of him. It's a very famous picture of Husseini and Hitler sitting in opposing chairs, talking to each other and enjoying their little company, and both of them Freemasons, of course. And Haji Amin al-Husseini will be the impetus in causing Croatian Muslims to join the SS, and it would be called the Honchar Division, and they would be busy viciously killing Orthodox Christian Serbs with the SS. And I would also venture to say that there are going to be some Muslims in the Croatian Ustashi further killing these Serbs. A horrible, vicious, awful, murderous group of sinners, these Muslims fighting with the SS. So here we have the first Muslims. Who are they killing? Well, they're killing Orthodox Armenians in Turkey. Then they're killing Protestant Christians in Spain under Franco. Now they're killing Orthodox Serbs in Serbia. All this to make my final point. Why do you think the same Jesuit order, using its American commander-in-chief, I don't care if they're Republicans or Democrats, they're going to bring millions of these Muslims over here? Remember, Reagan gave amnesty to everybody that came here illegally, and he did it in the 1980s. That includes these Muslims that came in here illegally. Does it bother you that these illegal invaders have taken over Dearborn, Michigan? Dearborn, Michigan is entirely Muslim. And if you're not Muslim, you might have a problem going around them because they hate your guts. I mean, I had a friend that was a Shia Muslim, and I warned him, listen, the Pope's killing off you Shia. The Shia Islam has to go. Why do you think the Shia leader of Islam working for the Pope has organized Hezbollah and Hamas to constantly act, to harass and kill Jews in Israel, bringing the Abrahamic curse upon the people of Iran? Jesuits know that. It's the Abrahamic curse of the Abrahamic covenant. You keep messing with Israel, you keep destroying Jews who live there, and they are racial Jews who live there. They're not Khazarians. You bring the Abrahamic curse on you. And so what happens? Well, they get these huge bombs dropped on them by Trump, doing away with a nuclear facility, when in fact the Jesuits running the leaders of Iran made sure that they secreted out certain of those nuclear materials so that when we have our atomic detonations here in certain American citizens' cities, it won't be blamed on the CIA who did it, and NSA and all those other intelligence boys. It'll be blamed on Iran, who never will have done it. Just as Muslims never brought down the World Trade Center. It's all done by the CIA and military intelligence in the name of Christ. To blame the Muslims for this, they got to do it to have the 12th Crusade, led by the American military industrial establishment, run by the Pope, for the destruction of truly nationalistic Afghans. We'll betray them, we'll cause for their destruction, and then we're going to give the Taliban, those evil bastards, $85 billion worth of American military equipment. You see how, and those are all Sunnis, by the way. The Taliban are all Sunnis. Building the Sunni Islam by this emergency war powers military government to be used against us in the future. So, I want you to see now how the Jesuits put the leadership in place of Iran after they ousted the Shah for certain good things the Shah had done. So they're going to get rid of him, and they're going to put this savage Shia Muslim leader, who's secretly a Freemason and secretly working for the papacy to create anti-Iranian fury everywhere. When I was in tech school in Denver and Lowry Air Force Base, there were Iranians there. We were teaching them our guided missiles, our AIM-9s. They were in our missile class, air-to-air missiles. We gave them all the technology they have. This military government gave Iran all this military technology during the days of the Shah. So after they do that, then they get rid of the Shah, and then they have this military that was given all this high technology by District of Columbia, District of Catholics. And they're going to put a military leader there that's run by the CIA. I want you to listen to this report from John Rappaport. I read him regularly. He's a very good columnist. This is John Rappaport's essay for June 26, 2025, 7:25 a.m. Blockbuster. Did the Trilateral Commission steer Iran into an Islamic theocracy and land us in this current war? The untold story. Rappaport begins. The guy's 80 years old, but he is brilliant and he is eloquent. Okay, listen to this. It has to start with Richard Nixon and Watergate, 1972. Buckle up. The real reason Nixon was thrown out of the presidency wasn't Watergate. It wasn't that particular criminal conspiracy to retain power for the Republican Party. Nixon all of a sudden started laying tariffs on nations exporting products to America. This was a massive betrayal of the man who saved Nixon's career after he lost the presidential election in 1960 and lost the race for governor of California in 1962 and sat at home in California, broke and depressed. That man gave Nixon a job and helped put him in the White House in 1968. That man was David Rockefeller. Well, whenever you hear Rockefeller, think Jesuit, okay? John D. Rockefeller, with the man in his career, 1912. Gotta get the book. David, of course, was a free trader, as were all men approaching his ilk. Free trade meant big money and big corporations roam free access the world to do business as they wish with no restrictions. Remember, free trade is a destruction of nationalism. And the Jesuits love it, especially against historic white Protestant nations. That's why Trump, when he put up these protective tariffs, it was good for us. That's why he's uniting us under him. He's doing something good, historically Protestant, like McKinley and like Andrew Jackson. But go on. Let big U.S. corporations leave America, dump their employees out on the street, set up shop in foreign countries where labor is dirt cheap, manufacture their products, and export them back to the U.S. Well, that's what they've done with Mexico, to us with Mexico and China. This is the free trade predatory globalist formula. Nixon was supposed to support that Rockefeller formula as president all the way. But Nixon felt his oaths and broke loose. So he had to go. David and the Rockefeller family were very close friends with Catherine Graham, the owner of the Washington Post, and she's a dame of Malta working for the Pope. As it so happened, two lightweight rookie reporters for the Post, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, caught a whiff of a possible Nixon story in 1972. It came through a man Woodward met, a man who would show up in a parking garage and throw out breadcrumbs about a Nixon scandal, a man Woodward called Deep Throat. And Deep Throat was Alexander Haig, not a Malta, I would add. Woodward wouldn't tell the chief editor of the Post who Deep Throat was. But we're supposed to believe the Post editor, Ben Bradley, a grizzled veteran with an intelligence background, let Woodward and Bernstein run with the story, publish their growing accounts, risk the reputation and the very existence of the Post with no assurances except the word of his two rookies that the President of the United States was a sordid crook? No way. Bradley had to know lots of details about the Watergate scandal up front. He was carrying water for Catherine Graham, who was carrying water for David Rockefeller, who was bent on drumming Nixon out of the White House because Nixon was canceling free trade and betraying him. Bradley let his two rookies run with the story because he wanted it to come out in the Post bit by bit, piece by piece, to achieve maximum drama and impact. If Bradley assigned that job to experienced reporters, they would realize they were being led by the noose through a series of intentionally dropped breadcrumbs that the whole con would be exposed. The Post eventually dismantled Watergate down to the studs, and Nixon resigned the presidency in disgrace. This is exactly what David Rockefeller wanted. Vice President Gerald Ford took over the Oval Office, and just by chance he appointed David's brother, Nelson Rockefeller, as the new vice president. David took off on a trip to Europe, where he gave a speech to financial heavy hitters, assuring them order in Washington had been restored and free trade was back on track. But David wanted more. He wanted more control over the presidency. Partly because of Nixon's rebellion on free trade, David formed a new group called the, now get this, the Trilateral Commission. Well, David didn't form it. Prince Bernhard did, on orders of the Pope. And Bernhard was a Knight of Malta and a former SS officer. Okay? And you got Rittner involved, too. He's another Knight of Malta and Jesuit-controlled pawn starting the Trilateral Commission. He wanted to pick the next president and flood his administration with trilateral members. He plucked a peanut farmer and relatively unknown Georgia governor, Jimmy Cotta, 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason, I will add, hyped him to the sky as a healer of national wounds, Nixon scandal, and the next thing anybody knew, Jimmy was a U.S. president. Shortly after Carter won the presidential election, his aide, Hamilton Jordan, said that if after the inauguration, Cyrus Vance and Zbigniew Brzezinski came on board as Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, quote, we have lost, and I will quit, unquote. So that's what Hamilton Jordan said. If these two guys come along, we've lost. Lost because both men were powerful members of the Trilateral Commission, and their appointment to key positions would signal a surrender of White House control to the commission. Vance and Brzezinski were appointed Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, as Jordan feared. But he didn't quit. He became Carter's chief of staff. During Carter's term as president, trilateral members shaped U.S. domestic and foreign policy. One of those policies had to do with Iran, where quote-unquote student rebels had taken 52 American employees of the U.S. Embassy hostages and kept them for 444 days. The nation's ruler at the time, the Shah of Iran, had gone off the reservation and decided to transform his country into a completely modern industrial powerhouse. That wasn't the globalist plan on the international chessboard. Lincoln, I'll say it wasn't the Jesuit plan. Because they got to have war on Iran and they got to destroy the Shia. So we got to get rid of the Shah who wants to build Iran. So a U.S., quote, man of great stature, unquote, was sent to Iran to take care of the problem, that problem. He was General Alexander Haig, who was a member of the Trilateral Commission. Yep. And he was also a colonel involved in the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination, as I prove in my book, Vatican Assassins. Alexander Haig also has a brother. His name's Frank Haig, or was Frank Haig, and he was a Jesuit teaching physics at the Jesuit University of Baltimore there, Frank Haig. My, my, how the Jesuit hand is everywhere. Haig met privately with the Shah's military commanders and told them to stand down and take no action in face of growing rebel movements in the country. Quote, the rebels won, unquote, and therefore the Shah was deposed and the Trilateralists and CIA brought in a new man to take over the country, the Ayatollah Khomeini. So do you see how the Jesuits brought this radical Shia cleric to power? Then there was Ayatollah Khomeini, and it's the same way with the guy in power today. Do you see that? His task, which suited him perfectly, was to take Iran back to the Stone Age, install an Islamic theocracy, and create a new version of the ancient conflict between Islam and the West, including Israel, because globalists favor war as a method of spreading chaos and building a new world order as a solution to the chaos. And so down the years, from 1979, when the Shah was removed, to now, that conflict between Iran and the West, featuring Israel, was massaged and exacerbated over and over. And voila, we have the present Iran-Israel war, with the U.S. ramping up its role. From Richard Nixon to today is a much, much straighter line than people realize. Courtesy of David Rockefeller and the Trilateral Commission. John Rappaport. Great article. So we can conclude that the CIA, when they put the Khomeini in power, never lost control of Iran. And hence the same dictator that's there today is also controlled by the CIA, just as Netanyahu's controlled by the CIA. And the Pope's CIA, I should say, run by the Knights of Malta and other papal officers and guards and soldiers working for the Jesuit order. Why do you think Kennedy's killed? He's killed because he wants to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. We're not going to allow that, are we, Jesuits? We'll get rid of Kennedy, and then we'll cover up the assassination, and nobody ever gets prosecuted except Clay Shaw. And that jury's, then that whole show was rigged anyway with the Irish Catholic judge. What, Haggerty? In conclusion, the Jesuits running the papacy run Sunni Islam. They run Saudi Arabia. They run the Muslim world. They brought millions of them over here as fifth column so that when the moment, when the order is given, they'll start their rioting and whatever those savage Muslims are going to do in the major cities to justify martial law. And then all these Muslims are going to be rounded up. They're going to be sent to the camps. And you got a bunch of angry white Roman Catholics that are in the Department of Homeland Security that are going to beat them half to death before they manage to get them to the camps. And there's train tracks going to these camps. They got a million-acre FEMA death camp just outside of Anchorage, Alaska. It's going to be filled with Muslims, a majority savage blacks, and going to be filled with the homosexuals. I mean, they're going to do here what Hitler did in Germany. It's just a replay. But Hitler didn't kill the Muslims. They're going to get killed here. They're going to be sacrificed. And it will be the judgment of God on the Muslims for persecuting the Jews living in their own land. The Abrahamic covenant will seek them out. And interestingly enough, I maintain the Lord will use the fascists run by the Pope to do it. The American fascists. But the other thing these Muslims are going to do when the sign is given, when the call is given, is they're going to start killing us, Protestant and Baptist Christians here in North America, just as they killed them in Spain, just as they killed the Orthodox in Armenia, just as they killed the Orthodox in Serbia. They're going to do the same damnable mass murder for the Pope here. And so we better be ready. These Muslims are not our friends. I mean, give them the gospel, but never trust them. They don't trust us. You don't keep faith with infidels. We're the Dahini. And you better stay armed. And you better watch out. This government doesn't disarm you, because it wants to. Because it wants to kill you, and it wants to use the sword of Islam to do it. Brought over here deliberately by a host of presidents, but primarily Jesuit Joe Biden. Brother Eric John Phelps, thank you for tuning in today. I have a book, Vatican Assassins, A Wound in the House of My Friends. Go to my website, vaticanassassins.org. You can purchase an e-book there. I would appreciate if you would buy it there and not get all these pirated copies out there now. Please, you know, I would appreciate that. You can send your gifts to RBT, P.O. Box 306, Newmanstown, Pennsylvania, 17073. Or you can send a gift to Cash App at cashtag ERIC. J-O-N-P-H-E-L-P-S, Eric John Phelps. Or you can send a gift to RBPB, donate at comcast.net if you want to use PayPal. Appreciate your gifts and prayers. As the message that I just gave you, you won't hear anywhere else. Unfortunately. God has called all men everywhere to repent, Acts 17:30, to believe the gospel, 1 Corinthians 15:1 through 4, that Christ died for your sins, was buried, and rose again. And that upon believing this gospel, whosoever believeth on him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. You've passed from condemnation into life, and the whole issue is believing on the Lord Jesus Christ. It has nothing to do with your works. No such thing as work salvation, my Muslim friend, and my Roman Catholic friend. Your religion's of the devil. It's all salvation by works, rather than by the blood of the Lamb. And indeed, God has a son, Muslims, and that son is not the son of God of Romanism. He's the son of God of the scriptures that Rome hates, the Reformation Bible. So until the next time we meet, may the Lord bless you as you do his will according to his word, the AV 1611 Reformation English Bible. Maranatha.